TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. A full 3 hours of Jets talk ahead for you. On this Saturday morning, we are going to break down the Winnipeg Jets piece by piece, see what ails this team, and see if there's any solution to the problems that the team has been experiencing over the past 2 weeks. We'll be joined by guests Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about what the Blue Jackets did at the trade deadline. And then later on in the program, we'll be joined by Anthony Sanfilippo from the PhiladelphiaFlyers.com to talk about the Flyers, the Jets' opponent, later this afternoon at MTS Center. In between then, I do say good morning to my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Boys, good morning.
Good morning, boys. I'm excited to talk Jets again, and I'm excited to, you know, get up early again. Big game today. Today is an absolute must-win, Richie, for the Jets. They have to end this losing streak right now.
Yeah, against a team that they're now fighting with for a playoff spot. I mean, you know, you're going to focus obviously on the top of the Southeast Division, but Philadelphia Flyers are right in there in terms of the eighth spot, because obviously they're not catching Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's a huge game for Philadelphia today, too. They're going to get in the hockey mood with a little snow on the ground, and it's going to be, you know, Philly games are always exciting games, regardless of what happens, win or lose. They're not like the boring Carolina-Florida games.
Yeah.
You're going to get your money's worth today.
The Winnipeg Jets enter today's game tied with the Washington Capitals in points, 38 points each. The Capitals do have two games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets, of course. And if you look at the schedule in today's game, I believe the Capitals are in action as well. The Capitals play at Florida today. So this is a game where you would hope the Florida Panthers, who are pretty much out of the Southeast Division race, would do the Jets a favor and defeat the Washington Capitals. That game is later tonight, so the Jets fans can do some scoreboard watching. If you look at the bottom of the Eastern Conference race, the 7, 8, 9 positions, the Jets are 2 points behind both the Rangers and the Islanders for 7th in the Eastern Conference. Both those teams have games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets. And, of course, the New Jersey Devils are 1 point ahead of the Winnipeg Jets in 9th place. Right behind the Jets, Philadelphia and Buffalo still nipping at their heels, which, like you said, makes all today's game all the more important.
Well, when you lose 5 games in a row in the National Hockey League, which I'm not sure how many teams have done that this year, it's pretty hard to lose 5 games in a row and not get any points in any of those 5 games.
Yeah.
You have to kind of try to be that bad almost. And the Jets have been that bad.
You know, Richie, Drew mentioned the schedule just quickly here. I know we want to move on to our diagnosis of what ails the Winnipeg Jets and maybe help with some problems, but if you look at their schedule, everyone knows that they've got 7 of their last 9 games at home, and they've got 6 home games coming up. And, you know, towards the end of next weekend, the next weekend, they've got a 4-day break there. But, you know, you've got the Buffalo Sabres, Florida Panthers, Lightning, Hurricanes, Islanders. You don't exactly have the hardest home schedule. So even if the Jets have to win 6 or 7 out of their last 9 games to get in, it's more than doable.
Well, 2 weeks ago, you would have said that the Jets are better than all those teams. Today, I'm not sure that they are, but they certainly are not they're not a murderer's row of teams they're going up against. They're not playing the Bostons. They're playing Montreal in that last game of the regular season at home. They're not playing the Pittsburghs anymore. You know, so they do get a bit of a break in the schedule in that sense. Before we look too far ahead, let's start with the Winnipeg Jets. Let's start with the forward group, because you look at this team right now, and they're not really scoring very much, or when they're scoring, it's too little, too late. Is it strictly a function, in your opinion, that they've been playing with a 3-line forward group for too long, and right now they're just simply out of gas?
I think that's part of it. I also think that to to a large degree, this is a one-line team. And if you look at, you know, how successful the Jets were earlier this season, who was scoring on a nightly basis? Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, Evander Kane. Obviously, Evander Kane has played with... He hasn't found line mates in the last 2 years that really work on a consistent basis, but when Evander Kane was clicking, he was playing with Alexander Burmistrov, Kyle Wellwood. Now, for the most part, he's playing with Olli Jokinen and Antti Miettinen, and those lines have changed big time, especially throughout the course of this five-game losing streak. But, you know, it's... How do you win hockey games when you're averaging one or two goals a game, especially when you're not, you know, the best defensive team? The Jets have been outscored 20-6 in their last five games, Richie. But I look at the Jets and the problems they've had on forward, and really it boils down to when the top line isn't scoring and Evander Kane isn't going, this team does not win, period. And there's obviously other problems. Alexander Burmistrov scored on Thursday night in Montreal. That was his first goal in 17 games. If anybody's listened to the show, they know that I love Alexander Burmistrov. Mm-hmm. And he's not a guy that they count on for primary offense, but one goal in 17 games, I mean, you just have to be better than that. And the fact is, guys, throughout the course of the last 2 years, they've had Nikolai Antropov and Kyle Wellwood in their top six for the last 2 years. And both of those guys, aside from Wellwood, who last year had a career year, both of those guys have struggled big time over the last 2 years. So you look at, you know, who they've moved in and out of the top six, whether it's, you know, giving Mike Santarelli a chance tonight or whatever. The fact is, Richie, they've had guys like Kyle Wellwood and Nikolai Antropov in the lineup all year in their top six, and the guys haven't delivered.
You know, those guys have had their periods being moved in and out. Let's maybe start with Jokinen and Kane and then get to the first line and then talk about Burmistrov.
Okay.
Jokinen and Kane have played, you know, Evander Kane's played the majority of his season with Olli Jokinen.
Yep.
I've yet to understand why. There's no chemistry there. We said it in the offseason when the signing, and the Jokinen signing was a bad signing. Didn't like it when it happened, and don't like it now. There's no chemistry. Jokinen's a shooter. Kane's a shooter. Kane's, you know, shoots more than anybody.
Yeah, he's the number one shooter in the league.
Yeah, I think he had him and somebody else were alternating, I think, back and forth. But the idea is there's no chemistry there. But the problem is that the chemistry test, you know, doesn't take two games maybe it takes five, maybe it takes 10, but it doesn't take 39. There's been too many games where they've played together. And they haven't played every single game together. But they played a lot of games together. And I don't know why. So, in terms of the first line, we'll talk about Byfuglien a little later, too, because that obviously falls under the umbrella of the first of forwards.
We're going to spend two segments discussing Dustin Byfuglien's role on this team.
So, you know, the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line. Did anybody think Ladd was going to keep up a point a game pace? I don't think reasonably. And Little... nothing at home about, and Wheeler's a solid player, but he has his periods of consistency and inconsistency. Regardless of all that, I mean, the problem is these three, and obviously they're somewhat related, is that they've all gone to the tank at the same time, and so, you know, when they're all playing poorly, it's hard to help each other. But for them to all go this long without a goal, especially during such an important period where even a win or two keeps you in the conversation more than you are now,
yeah,
you know, it falls on their shoulders. And don't give me, well, they carried the team for the most of the season. Well, yeah, they're the first line. And they didn't get the job done the last few games. And while they got the job done earlier on in the season, real first line players get the job done all the time. And I don't think any of them are really real first line players. They haven't had, I mean, Ladd's had a really good season. Wheeler, I kind of feel like his points productions overstates really how important he's been to the team. And Little's been Little, but they have collapsed here. And, you know, they haven't really sustained much offense, and they haven't been good. It's a call spade a spade. In terms of Burmistrov, I was for benching him because, you know, a lesson needed to be learned. But we were talking about it on Wednesday, talked about it when I was on with Andrew and Gary. And at some point, and as you mentioned, you know, I don't have the same expectations for Alexander Burmistrov than some other people. But at the same time, I mean, with Jokinen being so poor up where he's playing, Burmistrov is your next best center. I mean, undoubtedly, unless you want to throw Wellwood in the middle, and maybe for draws that helps, but defensively that really doesn't in terms of his size. And, you know, when you're a center, you have to cover down low, and Wellwood can't cover on the boards and in front of the net, so that wouldn't really work. Burmistrov is your best option, and he does a lot of things I don't love, but he's solid defensively. Mm-hmm. He turns the puck over a lot in his own zone, but he's solid defensively, and he has maybe a modicum of chemistry with Kane. Maybe he doesn't even have that great chemistry with Kane.
They seem to have some chemistry when they played. They were killing penalties together.
Yeah, I mean, it's different 4-4, obviously.
Right, obviously.
Yeah. But at some point, you got to play the guy because the lesson can only go so far, and you can deal with it in the offseason. But there's just not even a close option. It's not like you have 3 or 4 centers, and as you mentioned this, where you can throw in there. I mean, you can't keep picking guys up off waivers and playing them in important roles. And so guys like Bermistrov, who have talent, do need to play a little bit more. And, you know, he hasn't scored in 17 games, sure, and part of that is the way he plays. Obviously, another big part of that is, well, A, being a scratch, I believe, during that period. And if not during that period, he was playing on the fourth line for a significant period of time. So, and don't get me wrong, I was for the discipline action that Claude Noel took. And I thought it was a stand that he needs to take because more players need to feel that. I don't feel like players have any fear of Claude Noel. Now, whether or not Bermistrov feels fear after being benched, I mean, that's for debate. But we know he can do something. And you don't want to reward him with maybe 25 minutes a game, but at some point, 6, 5, 6, 7 minutes a game, enough's enough.
You can't see what you have in him if he's only playing that minimal time with really substandard, you know, line mates.
At the beginning of the segment, though, Drew mentioned that, you know, Claude Noel's really been rolling three lines. And, you know, I think that's an issue. And, you know, everyone knows I'm a big fan of Chris Thorburn. I'm not suggesting that Chris Thorburn should be playing 15 minutes a game, but, you know, there's almost too much of a reliance on the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line. And I'm not going to argue that, you know, the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line hasn't been good. They haven't scored the last 4 or 5 games, and I don't think there's any coincidence that the Jets have lost all of those games. Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing that, and I'm not going to defend that. I do think, though, that, you know, they have done some things well. And I think Ladd is one guy that, you know, night after night, his effort level, if you want to call it the cliche compete level, you know that his compete level is going to be there every night. Well, it is. I mean, he's the captain of the team. Mm-hmm. He's never going to mail it in. Wait, Blake, you disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that. I think that he's been trying to compete, but I just don't know how much they have left in the tank. I do think that...
Why are they so much tired than everybody else? Ladd's playing 19 minutes a game, Drew. He's not even playing 20 minutes a game.
You look at that. I mean,
only forward playing over 20 minutes a game is Evander Kane. I think everybody here would agree that he's in good enough shape to play over 20 minutes a game.
I would agree with that. But you look at them the last few games, and admittedly, I was away, so I did miss most of the Washington games and everything.
You're lucky
else.
You.
I know. Lucky me. But you look at them this week, these three games this week. You know, you didn't see the aggressive forecheck. You didn't see anything that's, you know, they dump the puck in, and just as quickly it would be out of the zone. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, just not winning the battles on the boards. But honestly, to me, it didn't even being able to engage in the battles on the boards.
Well, part of that is that they weren't engaging. Part of that, their strategy and their willingness to do a lot of things wasn't there. And I don't buy, you know, this and that. And they, I mean, let's talk about the fact that in the NC Islanders, did anybody think they had a chance against any of these teams once the game started?
Didn't have a lot of hope. Didn't have a lot of
confidence.
Montreal
game getting going. They're like, oh, what about the Wheeler goal? It's like, forget the Wheeler goal. I mean, this team's, and we're going to talk next segment about the defense because we can go on and on about that, but it just didn't bring it. I mean, there's nothing there. I mean,
and that's my question. Why isn't there anything there?
Well, I mean,
is it effort or is it exhaustion or is like,
but,
I mean,
what,
when there's
you know,
nothing
Claude Noel
there.
Said after what game was it? Claude Noel said, the Ranger game, we've played the most games in the NHL. Well, by 2 or 3?
I don't even think that was accurate at the time.
Yeah, cry me a river. I mean, excuses. And that might be an excuse to cover up for his squad and to defend his squad. But I don't care what it is. When you say it, you're presenting an excuse to the team. And whether or not they take it and explain it to the media doesn't mean that they don't feel it inside the room. Excuses.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the defense. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you on Twitter. We're going to give away some hats at the end of the program, some Illegal Curve hats. You know, we want to hear from you about what you think ails the Winnipeg Jets. Roaring Finnegan says they're not forechecking, they're not physical, and they need to crash the net. So send us your tweets, at Illegal Curve. and we will try and get some of them read on air, and we'll give away some Illegal Curve merchandise at the end of the program. Worth noting, according to the Winnipeg Jets website, James Wright is off of injured reserve. Don't know if that means he'll be in the lineup for today's game. There obviously won't be a game day skate with the 2 o'clock start time, but James Wright is off of injured reserve, so that's somebody you can sort of keep your eye on.
Yeah, I've got my game day preview coming up on IllegalCurve.com. Dave Manouk of IllegalCurve.com, I'm sure we'll be posting that at 11 a.m. sharp. But I think what I speculated was that either James Wright or Kyle Wellwood will go in, Drew, because Dustin Byfuglien's obviously going to move back to defense, which means either Paul Postma or Grant Clitson will most likely come out of the lineup. I wouldn't be surprised if Noel inserted James Wright. And that might be just because of the fact they might want a bit of a physical boost. James Wright's a guy also that should note, we should note, that was actually with the team on the trip
in Montreal.
So yeah, they could have used him, but they would have had to deactivate him. So just a note there.
We spent the first segment talking about what ails the Winnipeg Jets in terms of the forward group. Let's flip it to the back end now and talk about the defense of the Winnipeg Jets. That has, as much as the forward group has been lacking, the defense has been lacking just the same. You know, it's pretty, I mean, they're at full health at this point in time. So the excuses that they could have had in the early and middle part of the season in terms of their defense are no longer applicable. What's wrong with the defense? Richie, I'll start with you.
They don't play defense.
That's a big problem.
Well, I think the first problem, well, not first problem, but one of the problems is you come into the Montreal game, and it's a big game. Montreal played the night before in Philadelphia, and as you'll see today, and as people have seen if they've watched Philadelphia before, it's a tough team to play. You play, it's hard, it's an emotional game, it's a physical game. One that the Jets probably would use as an excuse if they had played Philadelphia the night before. I note that. So they go into Montreal, they're sitting there waiting for Montreal, coming up from New York, which is about an hour flight. And Montreal plays an emotional game, blows the lead, comes in, and then loses. I think 5-3 was the final on TSN last Wednesday. And then Thursday, they come in, so the Jets are sitting there waiting for them. The Jets decide, you know, we'll talk about Byfuglien later in the show, but moving to forward defense. The Jets decide to start the biggest game of the year with Grant Clitson on their second pairing. So they do Bogosian and Enstrom. They do Hainsey and Clitson. And Stewart and Postma. They put Grant Clitson on the second pairing in the biggest game of the year. I mean, I don't know what else you have to say.
And the reason why that happened, Richie, is because they moved Byfuglien to forward, so that elevated him.
Yeah, you know, but you don't need to put Clitson on the second pairing even if you do that.
Right.
They did do that, and then obviously those moves do go hand in hand in a sense. But the idea is I mean, that's what you're dealing with at some point. The other perspective is this. This team, this defense group as a whole is not good defensively. You talk all about talent. There's talent there, but they don't play defense. So, you know, exhibit A, B, C, D, Byfuglien, obviously, but there's other decisions, you know, Hainsey pinching or Clitson's turnovers or, and you know, Enstrom isn't exactly Nicholas Lidstrom back there. So there's many reasons why, but this defense overall doesn't play good defense. And we'll talk about goaltending later as well, but there's a team defensive element to things. And, you know, like, for example, Saturday's game against Carolina when the pass comes through the seam twice, and that's on the penalty kill. We'll talk about that as well. But the pass comes through the seam twice to UC Jokinen. Mistakes like this that don't happen in a lot of other teams. I'm telling you. Stupid mistakes. The team defense is just not good enough defensively.
And I'll give you some more examples. And this goes, Drew, to what we had a tweet from you know, one of our listeners, Roaring Finnegan. And this goes to what Richie's saying, too, as well. Thursday night's game against the Montreal Canadiens, if you look at all the goals, on the first power play goal. Yeah. And I love Mark Stewart. I'm a big fan of Mark Stewart, but he leaves his position in front of the net and leaves Michael Ryder alone in front of the net.
That's exactly right.
Goes to intercept a pass from Gionta, but leaves Michael Ryder alone in front of the net. Michael Ryder has an easy goal. You look at the fourth goal. Alex Galchenyuk scores. Byfuglien gets moved back to defense, and that's why Byfuglien was benched. Because if you look at the replay of that, Byfuglien is standing in front of the net, and he's kind of wandering, looking around.
He's covering the air in front of the net.
It's happened 10 times this year.
He's not covering Galchenyuk in front of the net. He turns around, goes to look, position himself to cut off the pass from behind the net, leaves Galchenyuk alone, and he has an easy goal, and leaves Pavlik out to dry.
There are a ton of goals, I want you to continue, but there are a ton of goals where the defensemen have terrible communication, and they make the wrong reads because they're not communicating.
Right, and Richie mentioned, you know, the defense, and again, you know, this isn't a Jets roast here, But we're pointing out the problems on the team. And sure, it's easy for me, a guy who wasn't a very good hockey player, didn't make it at a high level, to criticize these guys. But the fact is, these are glaring mistakes. And if you look at Ron Hainsey, gave away the puck in the second period and almost gave up a goal. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was Max Pacioretty had a breakaway. Ron Hainsey coughed up the puck with kind of a lackadaisical pass. This goes back to what, you know, Rory Finnegan said in his tweet about, you know, playing hard hockey, finishing your checks, aggressive forecheck. The fact is the Jets, and this is apparent, you know, to everyone, the Jets do lack intensity. When you're mm-hmm. watching the, whether it's the Coyotes or the Predators, teams that you want to model yourselves after, teams that have been in the playoffs year after year, they're tough to play against. It doesn't matter if you put out Eric Tangrady, if you put out Chris Thorburn, or if you're the Phoenix Coyotes, if you put out Lauri Korpikoski, whoever it is, you know that those guys are going to go out in the 9 or 10 minutes they're on the ice. They're going to check you to death. They're going to play a very tight defensive system. The Jets don't do that. If you look at the Montreal game, it was basically trading chances back and forth.
The team that's better than them, by the way. So you trade chances with a team that's more skilled than you are, and is a better skating team than you are. It's not, again, it's employing a certain style against a team to succeed, and that was not the style to employ. That performance was pretty poor. But where to begin? I mean, I think it really begins back with the two Washington games, the no-shows there. Those are no-shows, and that set a precedent.
Those are no-shows where you could have ended an opponent's season.
Yeah, I mean, they don't trade for Erat. I mean, long-term, I don't like the trade for Washington. I don't, but you end their season in terms of the small, you know, the Jets are only in the Southeast Division this year, and obviously the division realignment, and they're going to move to the West, but you win those games. Washington never trades for Marty Erat. They're done.
Would the best description for the Winnipeg Jets defensively be soft? Soft? Sloppy?
Sloppy, more than soft. Cause, I mean, probably a little bit of both, Drew. But yeah, overall, they're sloppy. And, you know, as you talked about that Michael Ryder goal, well, I mean, who has a chance to save that puck when the guy's just sitting there?
Uncovered.
Yeah. Uncovered.
I mean, and it's a goal.
And it's Michael Ryder who has 16 goals.
That's right. It's a goal that any of the three of us, anybody that's ever played hockey who's left wide, standing wide on their own in front of the net is going to score that goal. Yeah.
You mentioned sloppy versus you know, soft. And I don't think the Jets are particularly soft. I think you've got guys that are physical. You've got guys that aren't overly physical. A guy like Tobias Enstrom, the reason why he works with Dustin Byfuglien is because Dustin Byfuglien's a little bit more physical. But the problem with Buff is sometimes he gets a little bit tired in his own zone, and he loses focus, and he doesn't use his physicality. And, you know, it's very difficult when you have a situation where you're moving a guy that's been on defense, and I know we're going to get into that in a few segments, but, you know, the Jets really, to me, their problem is, Richie mentioned it earlier, communication, but it's also kind of a lack of focus. Mm-hmm. There's a real lack of focus. Earlier on the season when, you know, the Jets started off hot, and then they went on a bit of a losing streak, and, you know, they were playing physical and getting into fights, there was kind of a lack of identity. I don't necessarily know if it's a lack of identity, but I do think when you look at the Jets season, when you break the season down, and it's almost over, there's only 9 games left here, it's been, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. Jekyll and Hyde is a good way to describe the Jets. One game, they seem to be all on the same page, and one game, they don't seem to be all on the same page. When they're not on the same page, especially defensively, boy, is it ugly. It's ugly. There's just mistakes that you can pick apart the mistakes. And, you know, it's different, Richie, if...
So let me ask you this, then. So when they were going well, you know, prior to 2.5 weeks ago, when they were going really well, and they were the best team in the Southeast, you know, record-wise, mm-hmm. what has changed between there and now?
Well, I think part of it is the lack of protection up front, which we talked about. I think part of it is Andre Pavlik isn't playing as well as he was before. I think part of it is that defensively they've worn down for sure. I think Byfuglien has visibly worn down. And I think that changes a lot of things because he looks awful out there. And when he looks awful out there, then his defensive pairing looks awful up there. And then they switch other pairings to try and make up for it. And their pairings aren't very good past that. And, you know, that's a factor too, Drew. I mean, that's a huge factor. His ability to stay in shape or his inability to stay in shape is costing his team. I think that's a huge factor. But I think overall their defensive awareness isn't great. I think Pavlik bails him out a lot of times or did for that period. And I think now he's really not. I think they're playing a little bit worse than they were then. But it's... You know, a lot, you know, you put, I'm not calling for the coach's head by any means here, but at some point the defensive play needs to reflect on the coach, which we'll talk about coaching coming up. And like a Ken Hitchcock team, like, this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
This often. It happens too much.
Let's go to break. When we come back, special teams and special teams and coaching? Pardon me. Special teams and goaltending, coaching and management following that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 8:30, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, I'm your host, Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim, gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is, and you'll hear from Michael Remus later on in the program. We've been asking for your comments about what ails the Winnipeg Jets on Twitter. You can send them to us at Illegal Curve. Best tweets, we'll give away some Illegal Curve merchandise throughout the program. Tweet, this one came from Mitch Kasprick. Tweets at Legal Curve, why can Dave Tippett, the Phoenix head coach, get a total commitment to team defense with a similar talent-based team? Is Coach Noel not tough enough? Good tweet, good question. We'll deal with that question next segment. This segment, goaltending and special teams. How much of this is Andre Pavlik? How much of this is Andre Pavlik has been hung out to dry?
I think it's a bit of both, Drew. Qualifier. I don't love Andre Pavlik. I don't hate him either, though. I mean, I think he's probably a little below average NHL goaltender, and I mean that by like 30 goaltenders. You know, I don't think he's in the top group. I'll put it to you that way. Obviously, he's had spurts of playing really well, and the team has risen through the standings when he's played really well. But I also think a part of this is the fact that you have breakdowns like last night, where you have these crazy scoring opportunities for the other team. And you haven't prevented them, and you haven't played a good team defense. So I think that's part of it as well. I think the penalty killing's awful with certain opportunities, and I think that's obviously a reflection as well, on Pavlik. But he's also played so many games, and that's an issue too.
I think it is an issue, Richie. You mentioned, I think I'm a little higher on Andre Pavlik than you. I don't think he's a top five goaltender. He's a borderline top 10 to 15 goaltender for me. And that's why I'm saying we disagree.
Well,
so I don't want to spend this time having that subjective argument.
But hold on. For a second. Let's get off there for a second. Because I think in theory when you mentioned...
There's never been an argument that you don't want to have. I love it.
You think about, top 15. But then if you think about it in terms of like if I toss out 10 goaltenders to you right now,
right.
I just want to know who you think's better, like Carey Price, Ryan Miller...
Well,
Craig
right.
Anderson.
Fair enough. Okay, but the point I'm trying to make here is
get through 20 before.
That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is the breaking down talent versus how much he's played. And I think Richie did touch on something that I'm going to personally throw out there that I do think he has played too much. And I've listened to Matty Leibel and Gary Lawless go at it. If Andre Pavlik starts tonight, that's going to be his 36th start of the year. 36th start
35th.
Out of
36 game 35th start
right out of 40 okay, which I think is the most in the NHL, if not top two or three.
I think Pekka Rinne is the only guy who's started more than him.
Okay, so Pekka Rinne,
he's second in the league.
Okay, and I've said I think Andre Pavlik has stolen games, especially early on in March when the Jets were surging and getting to the top of the Southeast Division lead. But if you look at a lot of the teams, Ottawa Senators being one of them, the St. Louis Blues being another one, not only have they been using two goalies on a regular basis, they've been using three goalies on a regular basis. Who got the win for the Columbus Blue Jackets yesterday? Jake Allen. St. Louis, Jake Allen. And he's gotten, I think, five wins now. The Jets don't have a very good third goalie. No offense to Eddie Pasquale. He's not ready for NHL action. But the fact is, Richie...
They don't even play their second... First of all, right. Briz Galev has played one more game. So game started. Briz Galev and Rene have 35. Pavlik is 34. But your point's well taken. Yep. Ezzy. You don't need a third goalie. You need a second one. You have one. You don't play him.
Right. And that's an issue because especially in a 48-game season, and again, Claude Noel, if he was listening or he was on the show, he would say, well, I'm going to go with the guy that gives us the best chance to win. It's ultimately Claude Noel's decision. Who am I? It's nothing. It's just for me to criticize. But when you look at how he's played, and you'd have to think that he probably would have been served from having, three or four less starts. When you break up some of the road games, for example, putting him against the Islanders, I don't even think we've mentioned this, guys, but the Jets have faced backup goalies and third goalies in these games. Justin Peters versus Carolina. Peter Budaj, who I believe has 6 wins in a row now.
Great point.
Kevin Poulin on the Islanders. God. The Jets are facing a lot of backup goaltenders.
And facing another one today, and Steve Mason going to get the start for the Philadelphia Flyers by all accounts.
So why can't the Jets start their backup goalie, you know, once every 5 games?
Good point.
I think it's safe to say that that Al Montoya, I mean, first of all, wasn't the Jets' first choice to be their backup goaltender this year.
Yes.
And they've said all the right things, but I don't know how much confidence they have in him.
I mean, how much worse has he been than Pavlik, though? I mean, I realize it's different competition and different amount of games, but, I mean, is he that much worse? I just think that there's been opportunities, back-to-back games, other opportunities to play him, and I don't think that they have. Now, for example, this week, I believe they play Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then they have till Tuesday off.
Right.
You could conceivably give Andrew Pavlik an entire week off if you play him on Thursday night.
Okay, but Richie,
they don't seem to ever play him.
Richie, this notion that they don't have...
I expect to see Andre Pavlik in net probably every game the rest of the year.
No more back-to-backs, right?
Well, there's one more back-to-back at the end of the year, the Buffalo-Washington on the road back-to-back after this homestand. But this homestand, I expect it's going to be Andre Pavlik every single night because there's no back-to-backs, and you have 4 days between games in some
right.
cases.
But just because the Jets signed Pavlik to a 5-year deal, of course you're going to ride your big horse, but that doesn't mean you have to, you know, ride the horse into exhaustion. I mean, did anybody watch the Jets 1-0, road victory in Ottawa where Al Montoya got a shutout earlier this season? Mm-hmm. Looked pretty good to me then. I mean, you know, this notion that they don't have confidence in Al Montoya to put him in the net every 4, 5, 6 games, whatever, I really don't understand. I mean, I'm not saying Al Montoya is the best backup in the NHL, but I think he's earned the right to, you know, get a couple starts every once in a while.
Let's flip it over to the special teams. I mean, the power play is... I mean, words. There's no words for the power play, really. And I mean, it's beyond abysmal at this point in the year. So, you know, let's talk about, you know, why haven't they been able to resolve the problems on the power play?
I'm gonna start off, Richie. I have absolutely no idea. I mean, aside from the fact that if you look at the makeup and the personnel, which I think we are going to here, I don't know how it's this bad.
29th in the league, 12.9%. The only team worse is the Buffalo Sabres.
Right, and you mentioned that it's abysmal, but when I look at some of the players out there, I mean, Evander Kane is a highly talented player. Dustin Byfuglien's got a tremendous shot. Zach Bogosian, I think, has improved his shot, you know, as he's become an everyday NHLer. And I look at the personnel they're putting out there, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, this isn't the Tampa Bay Lightning, this isn't the Pittsburgh Penguins, but is it really this bad?
Fundamentally... You know, from a fundamental talent point of view, they don't have a natural passer on the power play, and that's a huge issue. Huge issue. Just throw that out there.
Well, and we, you know, Enstrom is back now, and I would say that probably you'd agree Enstrom is probably the best natural passer on the power play.
I think Byfuglien's actually the best natural passer. Enstrom's a very good passer, too. But
the problem is you need Byfuglien to be your cannon on the point.
You need a forward.
Right.
And pass.
Right.
And they don't have one.
And
well, then what's Blake Wheeler's best asset?
He's not a natural setup guy, Drew. I mean, he's a passer more than he's a shooter, but he's not a natural setup guy. It takes too long to do things.
It's different off the fly. When you're a big guy off the fly, and that's why Blake Wheeler, and we should, you know, mention again, I think that Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little work very well as a line, and I think that's because Blake Wheeler's big, he's got that reach, you know, he can get the puck to Ladd and Little, but, you know, you look at, you know, the Dallas Stars last night. They won. Who was playing on the point? Ray Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, you know, do the Jets have a guy like Ray Whitney, kind of a smaller forward that can, you know, move the puck around? Marty St. Louis. They don't have that. Not every team has these types of players, but that's what the Jets are screaming out for.
Well, you can't do Wellwood because Wellwood has such a poor shot that they stand 10 feet back off him, and then you have no option.
Wellwood's also, you know, Wellwood is another guy. Wellwood has a unique skill set, and I all know all the people that are listening out there. I stood up for Wellwood. He had a good year last year. He struggled this year, though. He hasn't brought enough, but he's not.
But he doesn't scare any opponents. I mean, you see Kyle Wellwood with the puck. Mm-hmm. You know how you can play him.
He's also not mobile enough to play the point. To play the point
also
on the
true.
Power play, you need a unique skill set. You can't just be a guy that has hands or a guy that has a good shot.
And we can agree that Olli Jokinen was never the answer at the
point. But he's still on the point.
It's the guy that quarterbacks everything. And, you know, you know, breaking down the forwards and breaking down the defense, I think one position we know that isn't going to change much next year is going to be in goal. I guess, you know, you can debate if they'll bring Montoya back.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as forwards and defense go, you know, the Jets really do scream out for a shutdown defenseman that can play the power play, which is something that every team wants, and a guy that can up the middle, be your first line center, and a guy that can be effective on the power play. And the Jets, they don't have anybody that's really scary on the power play, with the exception of Bufflin, I would say. He's the only guy that, you know, when he goes out there, you know that, you know, he can really not just have the howitzer from the point, but when Bufflin in motion, he can dangle, make some moves, and create plays. But the Jets really do lack a playmaker, and that's why I'm puzzled, because a guy like Evander Kane, they always use him down low. He's got a good wrist shot. For some reason, they just haven't been able to activate Evander Kane in the right way and get him going on the power play. And I think if Evander Kane added that element to his game, you know, that would really get the rest of his game going. Look at the Montreal game, guys. The Jets had those power plays and then just did nothing. Yeah, no. And it's a momentum killer. And it seems to always kill the momentum. They get a power play. They're good at drawing penalties. Guys like Wheeler and Kane, even Burmistrov, they can draw penalties. But then they get the power play, and then what happens? Nothing.
29th in the league. Well, let's then flip it over to the penalty kill, which at the beginning of the year was atrocious. It's improved slightly up to 77.8%, good for 25th in the NHL. You know, is the penalty kill as big of a problem? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, or are the signs there that, you know, Perry Pern's system is taking hold, and say next year they'll even improve on that?
When you're 25th in the National Hockey League, it's a problem. And when you were bad at the beginning of the year and you've become better, it doesn't mean you know, first of all, the games at the beginning count the same as the games at the end. As far as my last check, they count the same at the beginning. Have they improved a little bit? Yes, sure. I think that the Jets in the offseason need to focus on signing players who are good on the penalty kill. I think that there is an art to that. I think both on defense, fifth or sixth defenseman, and on offense, I think that's something they need to focus on. I think that's something that was completely disregarded this offseason by Kevin Cheveldayoff, and I think that was an oversight on his part.
You're saying that, I mean, the Jets don't seem to have any specialists on their team.
One of the specialists is Jim Slater, and he's been injured. He's one of the guys that, over the last 2 years...
Is Jim Slater a shutdown penalty killer in anybody's mind?
When he was healthy, it's not like the penalty kill was knocking the lights out.
No, but I'm just saying...
I mean, he's a good face-off guy. He's your face-off specialist.
Right. No, but he's a guy that blocks shots as well, and he's aggressive.
I mean, he's a good effort guy, but when you don't think of him as being, you know, one of the greatest shutdown defenders on the penalty kill.
I didn't say he's the greatest.
I know you didn't, but
for the last 2 years, Jimmy Slater has been a guy they've put out there. And James Wright is another guy that I thought was becoming one of our better penalty killers. You need quick guys. You need guys that'll block shots. And I'm not saying these guys are, you know, John Madden and Jay Pandolfo, but I'm just saying that these guys are, you know, the guys that have been injured, and they've struggled even more without those guys. But Richie mentioned that they need to address this, and I agree. I think, you know, the special teams have been so bad this year that should almost be a priority over even getting a number one center. Forget the number one center. Let's try to make our penalty kill a little bit better, because it's really cost them a lot this year.
The number one center is more important. Filling the special teams' needs in terms of penalty killers and such are easier to do.
There's no number one center. Just it's going to readily drop into their
lap.
Unless they start to trade some players for other players. Before we go to break, tweet from Earl Kubas. He says, "I think we are a below average team that was overachieving, but in the short season, there is no way to keep that pace." Keep sending us your tweets about what ails the Winnipeg Jets. We'll read some of them on air. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about the coaching and the management of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. Ten or so minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Winnipeg Jets game day, Santa Lucia pizza game day. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty with the call starting at 2 o'clock. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 1. And following us, it is Hustler and Lawless, as we like to refer to them, Gary and Andrew. Anyways, we've been discussing
who's
what
Andrew?
Ails... What's that?
Who's Andrew?
Andrew is Hustler.
What?
Yeah, I know. Shocking news.
We've been
discussing what ails the Winnipeg Jets. People have been sending in their tweets, tons of tweets. We appreciate that. Keep sending them in to us at Illegal Curve. We're going to award some Illegal Curve merchandise each hour to the tweet that we deem to be the best, so stay tuned for that. We've talked about the defense, we've talked about the forwards, and we've talked about the special teams and goaltending, the coaching and management of the Winnipeg Jets. Is it unfair, given the roster that has been assembled by the Winnipeg Jets, for us to expect them to be a playoff team?
I think Yeah, I thought they'd be ninth place. So is it unfair to expect them to be a playoff team? I'm sure about unfair, but I thought it would have been exceeding expectations by a little bit, not by leaps and bounds. At the same token, being the worst team in the league based on the team on paper probably would have been, you know, far below expectations. So, you know, kind of are what they are, really. Whether that's the best course to take in the big picture is a story for another day.
And I know that, you know, Richie, the coaching, especially, you know Perry Pern, who was brought in, and Charlie Huddy, they've taken a little bit of heat this year. But, you know, Charlie Huddy is, you know, 6-time Stanley Cup winner. Perry Pern is a good hockey coach. And I think Claude Noel has gotten a lot out of a lot of players this year on the Winnipeg Jets. I don't know that the problem is all coaching. And as far as the coaching goes, the special teams, sure, it deserves attention. But, you know, I look at, you know, who the Jets are throwing out there on a regular basis, and I don't know how much you can get out of Nikolai Antropov on the power play. I don't know, you know, how much you can get out of certain players when you put them out there in the same situations. Kyle Wellwood has struggled, you know, in all facets of the game. He's been terrible 5-on-5, and, you know, when they give him an opportunity on the power play, that's probably why he was a healthy scratch Thursday night, and he's been a healthy scratch, you know, throughout the season. But, you know, this is Claude Noel's second year, and he only got a half season here. And, you know, the Jets, you know, were winning games, and they were exploding offensively, and Pavlik was playing great. And now all of a sudden, you know, the season's worn on. They've started to struggle a little bit. And the special teams now, whereas maybe, you know, before it was masked by other things. Because let's be honest, guys, the special teams, when the Jets were winning, was still bad. Mm-hmm. It's not like the special teams were good when they were winning, and then it's bad now that they're losing. The special teams were awful all year, except for in the beginning of the season, the Jets were doing a little bit better on the power play. But as far as the, you know, the coaches go, you know, should certain guys not be here next year? I think the coaching staff as it stands is pretty good, and I think that, you know, the Jets, Chevy, True North, I think the plan is to keep the coaching staff in place for a while here. I don't think that, you know, they're looking at it and saying, you know, the coaches have done an awful job. Richie mentioned, you know, the fact that he thought the Jets would be in ninth. I had the Jets just out of a playoff spot. You know, my expectations in a shortened season, you know, based on the fact that the Southeast Division, in my mind, looked better, but it obviously hasn't been. I look at the Jets, and if they're overachieving, right, as our listener just said, tweeted at us, if they're overachieving, shouldn't the coaches get some credit for that as well? Doesn't a good coach make your team a little bit better?
Let me ask you this, Richie. If the slide continues, let's say the Jets finish the next, you know, 10 games or whatever, and they finish the season, you know, and they, or the next 9 games, and they finish with a 3-6 record in the next 9 games, and those 3 wins are all meaningless, you know, after they lose another 6 in a row or whatever. Would you ever make a move at this point, or is it just too soon at that point?
No, I think you give the coach 3 years. And that's, I mean, he's a lame duck going to next year, I believe, right? So if he doesn't do anything halfway through next year, they'll probably get rid of him anyways. But
you should mention Richie to the listeners. By lame duck, you mean he's in the last year of his contract.
He'll be in the last year of his contract next year. Drew, I think context needs to be you know, set forth here. And I think what it is this. Is, you know, I thought they'd be a ninth-place team. But did I, in my wildest dreams, believe the Southeast would be this awful? No. Did I think the Jets would have this much of a lead going into the past 5 games and be able to take advantage of an opportunity? No. And have they? Absolutely not. So he bears a fair amount of responsibility for the recent awful play by the team. And if this tailspin continues, then yeah, I think that falls on his shoulders just as much as it falls on the player's shoulders, if not more.
What about the fact that, you know, the argument you can only coach the players you're given, and you look at the bottom 6 on this team, and these are guys that are cast-offs, these are guys that are waiver wire pickups.
I think, Drew, let me get in there. I think that's a good point. I totally understand it. I think then it's a buy-in of team play, and it's a buy-in of team defense, and the team hasn't bought in. So either he hasn't adjusted to it, or the team hasn't bought in. But I think he's adjusted in terms of the style of play, because I do think that's what he wants. I don't think they've bought in. And I think that's an issue because, I mean, Claude Noel's not an idiot. He's been around hockey for a long time. He sees what he's got here, and he knows what he's got better than anybody. But for whatever reason, this team won't buy in to the way they have to play. They have to play a certain style to win. There's not enough talent here.
They should be playing the Phoenix Coyotes style, is what you're saying.
To an extent.
To an extent.
And they don't. And part of that's personnel, but part of that's buy-in. And they ain't buying in. And then part of that, don't get me wrong, it's not all on the coach's shoulders. It's also on the players. You know, why aren't you buying in? Take some responsibility. But the coach also, you know, like it's that classic comment, and it's 100% true. It's easier to replace one coach than 20 players. And I don't think this is the time to do that. But if you can't get through to them at the end of this year and then next year as well, then you have to take into account, you know, hey, there is roster turnover annually, and they don't seem to yet be buying in.
And Drew, we should, you know, be clear about why that's important. You know, Richie's coached. I've coached before. And, you know, coaching is difficult for all the people that have coached out there. And, you know, Claude Noel, I think, you know, he's inherited a team. And at this point, you know, it's not as inherited because he's built it over the last couple of years. But, you know, I think he wants a certain style of play. He wants his guys to play a certain way. And I think to a certain degree over the last, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks, he's gotten frustrated. He's been benching Alexander Burmistrov, and he moved Byfuglien to forward, and that didn't work out. I didn't think that was a good move, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've been talking about that. We're going to talk about that in after
9:15, we'll talk about that.
At 9:15, after we interview Anthony Sanfilippo.
Aaron Portsline first.
Sorry, Aaron Portsline. Sorry, I've got my guess mixed up. But when we're talking about this, I mean, you decide to move him in one of the most important games of the year, and then it doesn't work out, and then you bench him. And is this the time to do a Byfuglien on forward experiment? I don't think so.
I said on Wednesday that it reeked of desperation. I didn't like the move then, but I mean, you bench him. You benched him because, you know, he didn't cover the guy in front of the net on Thursday. Now that's been a problem for Dustin Byfuglien.
He was on defense at that point.
Yeah, he had moved back to defense at that point, and he didn't cover Galchenyuk.
Right.
And they benched him because, you know, that's been an ongoing problem for the last 2 years at the very least. I don't even know what it was like in Chicago, but who knows at that point, that he just doesn't take the man in front of the net. I mean, you remember the Philadelphia game last year, that game that Pavlik had the 50 saves or whatever it was, and then, you know, Philly tied the game up with about 10 seconds to go because, again, Byfuglien didn't take a guy in front of the net. He's not sound defensively. We get all that and everything. It's just an ongoing problem for the Winnipeg Jets in regard to Dustin Byfuglien.
Drew, Richie mentioned Ken Hitchcock earlier. Ken Hitchcock is one of the greatest coaches in there, you know, greatest coaches around. And Richie mentioned that, you know, guys don't play like this under Ken Hitchcock. And, you know, we're not saying, oh, look at Claude Noel, he's not Ken Hitchcock, he's not an excellent coach. But this is the point. You have to find a way to get the most out of Byfuglien. Byfuglien's a unique player. But in a lot of respects, Dustin Byfuglien is your MVP. And yeah, sure, Andrei Pavlik's important, Ladd's important, Kane is important. But Byfuglien really can change the outlook of a game. We've talked about it because of his skill set. He's got size. He's got great hands. He can create so much offensively. He's got a Stanley Cup under his belt. And you have to find a way to rein him in. However you have to do that, that's coaching. You have to find a way to get him focused.
To harness his...
Harness that. And I think he has to a certain degree. And I think at times, you know, everyone looks at Claude Noel and especially the last couple of weeks, and he looks frustrated. Well, they're losing. They've lost 5 games in a row. Of course he's frustrated. Well, you have to find a way to get Byfuglien to play well. You have to find a way to get Burmistrov. Guys that are, you know, probably in need of a little bit more coaching. I don't think a guy like Andrew Ladd, you really need to tell him what to do on the ice. Andrew Ladd, game after game, knows what to do. He's the leader of the team. He's been there. He's won Stanley Cups. I don't think he needs that type of harnessing that a guy like Dustin Byfuglien needs. And I think that, to a certain degree, is something that Claude Noel has to work on, you know, going forward.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch joins us, where they've changed the culture in Columbus, and it hasn't taken very long. You'll hear about that next here on TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline. Congratulations, Aaron. You are the first of our guests to have their own theme song, Double Nature by Mustache.
You like that, don't you? That's the Swedish rock band that they actually played before the Blue Jackets and Sharks played in Stockholm, and it was quite a a shock to myself, anyways, to see the fantastic flying V, and the place was rocking before face-off, and those guys have never left me. So, yeah, thanks for that.
No problem. I got to tell you, I wasn't familiar with them, but when I heard the you know, just that intro, that opening riff yesterday when I went after we talked about it, it's a really good opening riff.
Outstanding. It's perfect for this format. That's what I was thinking of you guys.
And Aaron Drew also loves it because he has a handlebar mustache.
But I think they may pronounce it moustache, but that's fine.
Well, either way, they can tweet us and correct us. I'm sure they're listening down there in Stockholm or wherever. Yeah. Aaron, anyways, welcome to the program. Good morning to you, of course.
Yeah, well, good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. You know, Aaron, you gotta look back, Wednesday being the NHL trade deadline. In your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine that the Blue Jackets were going to make as big of a splash on Wednesday as they did, both in the Gaborik trade and then in the Steve Mason trade?
Well, I knew they were going to try to be active, and though I certainly didn't have Marion Gaborik as a target, if you follow the team closely and put the pieces together, you know, Derek Brassard seemed expendable, John Moore seemed expendable. Derek Dorsett was a bit of a surprise. We knew they were going to try to boost scoring, and they were dangling that first-round draft pick as an enticement. But Gaborik was not on the radar. If they got an offer for Steve Mason, frankly, I'm shocked they were able to get a third-round draft pick and a capable body back for him. But I'm not surprised that they were moved. But the return definitely was a surprise to me and to many.
Aaron, in terms of Jarmo Kekäläinen, you know, there's a lot of GMs who come into an organization and they take a long time to evaluate what they have, and they don't have the confidence necessarily to make a move quickly, a bold move. Why do you think he had the confidence to make a move so quickly?
Well, this is a confident man. This is a guy. There's a bit of a Bond character there, where you're never quite sure what he's thinking, and I think he likes it that way. He sort of keeps you not just on your toes, but a little off balance. You're not really quite sure where you're supposed to be, and keeps you guessing. But the guy is intense. Everybody who knows him well speaks to his intensity. And you know what? I mean, if you look at his draft history with the Blues, he has drafted well. But really what stands out is his willingness. I'm sure the Blues organizations, with his input, he was the assistant GM, to steer away from those draft picks pretty quickly if he doesn't like what he sees. I mean, they drafted Eric Johnson, which most would agree now, not a great number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. But look how quickly they turned around and moved him. And a lot of guys who spend draft picks on number one overall picks, they become almost overly protective and defensive of those picks and wait too long to see what they're hoping to see. This guy appears to be a rather bold mover, and you know what? That's something that this organization at this juncture can probably use.
You know, Aaron, as far as the Marion Gaborik trade goes and as far as the Steve Mason for Michael Layton and a draft pick goes, does that say as much about going for it this year as it is about going forward and how Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson are putting their stamp on the team and saying that they're serious about winning, not only going for it this year, but you know they're serious about going for it next year and the year after?
Yeah, well, there's great irony here. I think 9 months ago the Blue Jackets traded a former 40-goal scorer for three guys yeah. from the New York Rangers, right? And then on Wednesday, they traded three guys to the New York Rangers for a former 40-goal scorer. So people in Columbus are going, wait a minute. Well, where are we going here? Well, we're going away from that. And now they're right back at it with they've got a superstar in the dressing room again. The dicey thing here is Gaborik has one more year in his contract. He's up after next season. They're going to try to re-sign him. But when exactly do you do that? I mean, do you go at it this summer? Or do you let Marion Gaborik play part of his season as a contract year? This is a trade for today, for sure, but I don't think it's a trade only for today. It's a trade, you know, that can help them in the future. Look where Brassard was. I mean, great guy and a spirited player at times, but had never really lived up to the number six overall selection, was never the best player in the games that he played. John Moore had been pushed down the depth chart here by the emergence of Dalton Prout, who's been fantastic, and the arrival of Tim Erickson last year, and they've got Ryan Murray coming. Mm-hmm. And Derek Dorsett, hard to believe that the guy who wasn't the former first-round draft pick is probably the guy they had the most difficult time parting with. But those guys, those energy guys, who are, they're really hard to find, but when you do, they're not as expensive as the 40-goal scorers. And so in that way, the move, I think, makes a lot of sense.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch.
Now, Aaron, we mentioned John Davidson a little bit earlier. His role in this move, you know, obviously he's been in St. Louis prior to coming to Columbus, but of course has deep ties with the New York Rangers organization. Did he have a significant say in the move that was made on deadline day?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I don't want to say it's awkward, but they're taking great steps to let it be known that Kekalainen is the general manager. And I don't think that John Davidson is he's always the strongest voice in the room. I mean, this guy is a Hall of Fame broadcaster. Mm-hmm. He can drown other guys out. They've gone to great lengths to let Yarmo have the floor. But there's no way that a trade of this magnitude is made without the president of hockey operations mm-hmm. being on board. I think for now, these two are working in lockstep, and it has to be that way. Davidson, for one, has been here longer than Kekalainen has been. Not long, but he's been here certainly longer than Yarmo has been here. So those two are very much a package deal right now.
You know, Aaron, on Wednesday, we had Pat Leonard on from the New York Daily News, and the question we asked him was, you know, you take a step back to before the Rick Nash trade, and if we ask from the New York perspective, and let's ask from the Columbus perspective, you know, from your perspective, really, would you, if you looked at the trade in terms of Nash, Brassard, Dorsett, and Moore for Gaborik, Dubinsky, Anisimov, and Erickson, who gets the better of the deal?
Well, and I think you also have to put the first-round draft pick in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you do that, I think Columbus gets the best part of the deal. I really do. In part because I think there's an understanding now of what Dubinsky means to this team, even though he's not supplied the offense. There's a sense that Anisimov is still a young player. He's a sort of a sporadically dynamic player. They really like Erickson. I think they prefer Dubinsky over Brassard, for sure. I think they feel like they've got enough defense, and I think they think Anisimov is a real wild card with a very intriguing skill set. And they clearly prefer Tim Erickson to John Moore. So at least from the Columbus perspective, they would make, if that's one big trade, I think they would make that again in a heartbeat.
10 minutes past the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch.
Aaron, we had you on a couple of weeks ago, and we were, you know, talking about Jack Johnson, and you were mentioning that, you know, he's been very solid for them, and one of the main reasons why they've been able to go on this run here. And if you look at their defense, you know, they've got Fedor Tootin and Nikita Nikitin, who I really like, a physical type of defenseman. Adrian O'Cohen giving the veteran presence. Two-part question for you here about the defense. Do you think it's going to be good enough down the stretch and allow them to get into the playoffs? And do you think, especially with Ryan Murray coming in next year, do you think that the Jackets' defense is good enough next year, or do you think they're going to have to maybe add one or two defensemen in the offseason?
No, I don't think they add at all in the offseason. No, I think they like where they're at. They've got, if anything, they may subtract, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but the way that Wisniewski has been injured through the years, I think you have to mention him as at least a dark horse candidate. I wouldn't think it's likely, but it's certainly possible that he could be a buyout candidate. But you know what? Their blue line has been the strength of the team. And really, I can't – this is a kid that not a lot of people know about because of where he was drafted and where he's been the last couple of years. But this Dalton Prout has come in and been – arguably their best defenseman here for the last 4 weeks or so. A very, very impressive player. And it's allowed other guys to slide back where, you know, Erickson and Moore and Acuña were sort of rotating on the third pair for a while. They've found Tootin and Jack Johnson to be a very good pair. And then Prout and Nikitin have slotted in as the number two pair. With Murray coming, and they've got a couple of other guys down in the minor leagues that they really like. Cody Golubev, who's bounced back up and down here in the last couple of days, is a guy that they really like. Will Weber's the kid that's coming on. And as you mentioned, Ryan Murray. Nobody knows exactly where Murray's going to be health-wise. He's expected to be ready for training camp. I don't know how strong that shoulder's going to be. And being away from the game as long as he's been, I find it hard to believe that he's going to step right into the NHL after coming from junior and taking a year off of hockey with the injury. I would suspect he'll need some time in the AHL. But if he's as good as everybody says he is, I don't think it'll take long.
You know, Aaron, in terms of the big picture, Columbus, obviously, you know, loyal hockey fans, but there's been tough teams to follow here in terms of, and obviously you would know, following them on a day-to-day basis for so long. How did these moves register in the Columbus marketplace?
Well, it went through the roof. I mean, he hasn't played at home yet, so there hasn't been the great warm welcome for Marian Gaborik. But, you know, the people here, they have been, this year is a really difficult and pleasant thing for them to quantify, because for years they've been told that this is going to be a good hockey team. The team, the organization has spent accordingly, and then it flopped. And so there's become this sort of cynical tone of yeah, this guy's going to be great. Oh, another number one draft pick. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And it never really gains traction. The team never really has fully hugged back the fans as much as they've, you know, they've sort of been standing there with their arms open, if you want. And so this season comes along, and nobody's expecting anything. For the first time in a long time, nobody's expecting anything other than a very high draft, except Jones, Nathan MacKinnon. And then out of nowhere, this team goes on an incredible run, where a 12-game point streak, 8-0-4. They have a 12-game point streak still alive at home now, heading into tomorrow night's game against Minnesota. And so people are sort of looking at each other, wondering if it's okay to believe. Is this real? Is this right? Are we being fooled yet again? And so the Gaborik trade, I think, confirms to them that, yes, management now thinks that this is real, that something can happen this season. And it sets up for a pretty wild final 10 games to this season, where, you know, the Blue Jackets fans have not had to do a lot of playoff math through the years. And now you get the visual of them every morning looking at the NHL standings and figuring out where their guys stand, and this is what it's supposed to be like, and it hasn't been like this nearly enough here.
Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, here in Winnipeg, we've heard for the last 2 years a lot about the Winnipeg Jets need to change the culture of the Atlanta Thrashers, and nobody's quite sure what that means here in Winnipeg, but it's a buzz phrase, and we've heard it a lot from the team itself. Are you surprised? First of all, do you agree that the culture has changed in Columbus since John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen have come in? And are you surprised at how quickly they've been able to do so?
Well, I think that I'd say it this way: the culture is changing. I don't know if I would say it's changed. And by change, I think we mean change for the better in the way that it needs to be and is settled. I don't know that it ever is settled. I think it's always just sort of this changing, morphing, undefinable, strange theory that people have in sports. And the culture here in Columbus has not been great. You know, I mean, you had two 40-goal scorers, Rick Nash and Jeff Carter, who wanted out last year. That tells you something's wrong. And if something's not wrong, the fact that they do want out makes it not a great culture. John Davidson deserves a ton of credit, I think. I've been told, I think it's true. It always starts at the top. Always starts at the top. And to me, this, I think every hockey team needs a certain number of players who care only about winning hockey games. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that makes them not great people, makes them difficult people to have a conversation with. It makes them seem rather limited as human beings. But all they care about is winning hockey games. It's the most important thing in the world to them. They're not happy to just be in the NHL. They want to be great in the NHL. And Columbus is starting to get that sort of traction where good is not good enough. And that's been the problem here from day one.
Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch, thank you as always for your time this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And it should be a fun last 10 games or so heading into the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Aaron.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. We're giving away Illegal Curve merchandise, one hat every hour for the best tweets. Congratulations to Kevin R.D., who tweeted us in the first hour, you have won an Illegal Curve hat. We'll be in touch with you to get you to arrange to get you that hat.
But Kevin has to promise that he's going to wear it at all times.
Of course.
Like, even if it's winter or, like, I want to see Kevin wearing that in the shower.
You want to see Kevin in the shower?
No, I don't want to see. I don't personally want to see Kevin. I'm saying if he's in the shower, he should be wearing it at all times when he goes to bed, when he goes to work. He has to promise to wear it.
What was the tweet?
Let me just pull it up right here. I got it.
Doesn't even read the tweet.
I was going to read it right away. I lost it here for a second. Hang on. Keep stalling.
So, Drew, back to talking.
Here it is. Sorry. It's more. Kevin R.D. tweets at Illegal Curve. It's more in their head than anything. They can't handle the mental pressure and don't know how to finish teams off. i.e. the Caps and the Canes. So, interesting interesting take. You win a hat. Congratulations. Keep sending us your tweets at Illegal Curve. While you're doing that, you can also send us your tweets for the Illegal Curve game-winning goal contest and the Illegal Curve 50-50 contest. You can send those at Illegal Curve. Thanks to Aaron Portsline last segment for joining us to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli. We're actually going to be going to Bernstein's Deli post-show for lunch. So
we are?
Yes, of course we are.
Awesome. Right. And lunch is on you as well.
That's certainly not the case. Anyways, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli that has been serving deli food for nearly 30 years. Take it home or eat it there. Bernstein's Deli is your deli destination in Winnipeg. Check out their website at www.bernsteinsdeli.com. Richie, as we've been sort of teasing this for the last, for the first 80 minutes or so of this program, Dustin Byfuglien, forward or defenseman Richard Pollock?
Well, I think we first break down the actual move that happened during the second intermission of the Islanders game, or right on the bench there. I didn't like the timing of the move. I don't mind the idea behind it, although I didn't think that this was the right time and place to do it, both the game and the season. You know, I think I said this on Wednesday, when you put him in the middle of the second intermission or the beginning of the third period, what you're doing is you're not giving him really a choice. And I don't necessarily mean that he needs to have a choice in where he plays as a professional hockey player, but, you know, you're putting him in a position where he basically can't say no because of his teammates. He can't express exactly why he thinks it's a good and bad idea if it hadn't been talked about before or even if it had. And so he goes up there because he essentially is at the mercy of the coach. And I agree, Drew, that it smacked desperation in terms of trying to get the forwards going. I mean, have you practiced it consistently? Do you know what'll happen? I mean, I know Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd have played together in Chicago, Atlanta, and Winnipeg, but I mean, I don't know if they've played that much together in terms of, you know, on offense. There didn't look to be like there was much chemistry, and it was an odd move, especially considering you could move around the forward lines. I mean, there's like, you know, as I've tried, I like to see the Kane Little Wheeler line together that hasn't been together essentially all year. That's an option. And you go to the Byfuglien option. It seemed like a weird choice to me. So just that specific point, I think Jesse wants to get in here on that point. I didn't like the move, but I do want to talk about it, you know, on a bigger scale after Jesse chimes in.
You mentioned that it's, you know, suspect timing, but it's also about kind of the long-term plan. I don't think anybody thinks that the long-term plan is to have Dustin Byfuglien as a forward. So if that's not the long-term plan, you know, whether you want to call it desperation or not, the move was made what Claude Noel says the move was made for was to ignite the offense, because the top line of Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, and Blake Wheeler hasn't been going. Evander Kane, you know, hasn't been putting the puck in the net. I think I wrote this on my game day preview. He's only got one goal in his last nine games. You know, the Jets can't win unless Evander Kane is scoring. He's just too important to this team. But, you know, putting Dustin Byfuglien up there, I don't think is going to be the panacea, as they say, for all the problems. It's just not going to be. And, you know, I almost think that, you know, it was meant to happen, that it wasn't going to work out, and then you know, Byfuglien was going to get benched. You know, it's very difficult. You know, Richie, we talked about this when Brent Burns moved from defense to mm-hmm. forward. Anybody that's played hockey, defense, and I didn't play hockey very well. When you move from defense to forward, it's a very difficult transition, especially at the National Hockey League level, let alone, you know, the AHL level or the junior level, where, you know, you'll probably see it more often. But, you know, to do that and kind of, you know, in mid-season, you know, to now go up there and, you know, you're forechecking and you're with two mm-hmm. really good forwards and Brian Little and Andrew Ladd, it's a very difficult thing to do. And look at San Jose, Brent Burns, that was just an experiment. That's not going to last. He's going to go back to defense. They need him on defense. Yeah. You know, they did it, remember, with Sergei Fedorov back in the day with the Detroit Red Wings. It never lasts. I mean, guys are better suited for certain positions. Dustin Byfuglien, I know he played forward in Chicago, Richie, but he's a defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah. They need him to be a good defenseman, not a forward.
And Rick Dudley, when he acquired him in Atlanta, having worked in Chicago, acquired him as a defenseman. That's what predominantly Byfuglien's played throughout his career as a junior hockey player and in the National Hockey League. Another factor here that has to be said, and it's been pointed out, but Dustin Byfuglien's too heavy to play forward. He just does. You have to skate more forward than you do on defense, because you can conserve your energy more. Hence the reason why defensemen play more than forwards. He's too heavy. Takes too long to get up the ice. I mean, he has a significant weight problem. I mean, that's obvious.
And I can relate to that.
You're not a professional athlete.
Yeah, you know, by any means, but yeah.
You're a professional eater. You might be a professional in that competition.
But I mean, that needs to be pointed out. And he can't get up and down the ice quick enough. So the forecheck's all fine and dandy. When you come up with a head of steam from the back end, it's a lot different than creating a head of steam from the blue line. And he's not really able to do that. You know, he's not a bad technical skater. But it takes him three, four steps to get going. You know, everybody keeps talking about that 4-on-4 goal that he created for Andrew Ladd, when Adam Henrique chases him behind the net, but he gets a three-step start at Adam Henrique because he chased him around the net. You know, Dustin Byfuglien takes a while to get going. He's a truck when he gets going, but it's a while. And so the idea is, in the middle of the neutral zone, can you get going quick enough to get on the forecheck? No, he can't. He's too heavy. And so that's another factor, and that needed to be taken into account when looking at it. And should they have kept that experiment going? Likely not, and you can see obviously not, because they moved him back to defense. But doesn't mean his defensive game is by any means flawless, by any means.
And to add to what Richie's saying, I don't think you could move Tyler Myers to forward. I don't think you could move Chris Pronger when he was healthy to forward. It's not just because Dustin Byfuglien happens to be 260 pounds. I mean, a big defenseman is tough to move and you know, mold into a solid right winger who gives you the same speed that Blake Wheeler gives. It's not just about that. I mean, this was an experiment. Let's call it what it is. And yeah, I know that Rick Ralph and Adam Wozniak are going to be happy to hear this, because people have been calling into the post-game show for the last 2 years suggesting that Dustin Byfuglien should be a forward. Well, guess what, guys? Dustin Byfuglien wasn't very good at forward, so I think we've now found out what happens when you move him to forward. So let's call a spade here and realize that it was a failed experiment and it was something that shouldn't have been done in the first place.
At the time. It's more complex than that, though. I mean, you look at it in the big picture, and we want to talk about it actually last Saturday. We didn't get to it because a couple of the interviews, which were great, went long. And, you know, Dustin Byfuglien loses 30 pounds. And maybe you look in the, you get into the offseason, you say, okay, he's making 5.2 a year, and you get more value for him on defense than forward, in my opinion. But, you know, you bring in Jacob Trouba next year, and maybe Jacob Trouba is able to make the adjustment to the National Hockey League just as Dougie Hamilton has. Able to play top 4 minutes, able to play in your top four, and he can slot in as a four defenseman. This is all a hypothetical. Bogosian slots in on your top pairing, and Jacob Trouba is your second pairing with other defensive moves. It might be that if Trouba's able to do that, instead of moving Byfuglien or Bogosian to the left side, or Trouba to the left side, and I assume young defenseman, you're not going to want to move to the left side, what you do is you move Byfuglien to forward, because he becomes an asset there based on the talent level that you have. And if he loses some weight in the offseason, he might succeed at forward. Now, you have to deal with attitude issues and all those other things. It's not the most unrealistic option to do that. But I think you need time. You need practice. He needs to be in shape. You need to know what you have on the back end. We haven't talked about that as well. You know, Drew, why don't we go to break? Because I want to talk about how big of a hole, literally and figuratively, they leave on the back end by moving Bufflin to forward for that experiment.
Let's do that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.